The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the individuals being interviewed and do not necessarily represent those of the Greater Winter Haven Chamber of Commerce. You're listening to It's Happening in the Haven. I'm your host, Brianna Price. Each episode, I get the privilege to speak to the amazing people taking Winter Haven and its surrounding Central Florida area to the next level. We're future-focused, celebrating our entrepreneurial history and leveraging it for our bright future ahead. This podcast is made possible through the generous support of our sponsors who believe in advancing commerce and community here in Winter Haven.
Hey, Winter Haven, it's Anna here. For the next several weeks, you'll be hearing me doing the interviews instead of our lovely host, Bree, while she's out on maternity leave.
We'd like to welcome and thank Advent Health for sponsoring Season 6 of our podcast.
Hi, my name is Dr. Olamide Oshikoya, and I'm here to tell you about the partnership between Advent Health and Rothman Orthopedics that is revolutionizing how care is delivered to patients in Central Florida. As a shoulder and elbow orthopedic surgeon for Rothman Orthopedics, I offer specialized, tailored care to treat conditions such as arthritis, tendon disorders, bone loss, fractures, and instability. My team and I at Rothman Orthopedics have partnered with Advent Health to provide innovative, expert care for joint treatment and sports medicine intervention. Our offered care is tailored to meet each patient's health goals. Next day appointments are available. Please call 844-407-4070 or visit us at transformingortho.com.
We have loved talking about all the people and places that make downtown Winter Haven so special. And now it's time for a best of episode. On today's episode, I speak with Jacqueline and Wade, owners of Adler's. Jacqueline and Wade share about their journey to downtown Winter Haven, how collaboration has impacted their business, exciting things coming down the pipeline, and more. Well, thank you guys for being on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yes, I'm very excited to jump into this conversation because I will have you know I'm a huge Adler's fan. So I'm very excited to kind of hear about the origin story, how you guys met, and then obviously talk about burgers at some point because, you know, this wouldn't be a show about Adler's without talking about some burgers. So if you guys wouldn't mind just kind of sharing with our listeners a little bit about how you came to Polk County, how you came to Winter Haven, even maybe how you guys met or anything along those lines.
I moved to Polk County from upstate New York.
Oh, I didn't
realize
that.
And then I met Wade through my best friend that I worked, I bartended at a TGI Fridays.
Nice.
Wade lived in downtown Orlando and I convinced him to come this way.
Really? Wow. So how long ago was that?
14 years ago.
Wow. Yep. So have you guys been in this area, Winter Haven, for that long? Or just
Davenport.
Kind of in? Okay, Davenport. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where things started, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. We both worked over in Davenport and lived in Davenport. We worked at Lingster's together for quite a few years. And then I went on to the Wheelhouse, which was our original investor with food truck.
Okay.
I worked at the Wheelhouse and then we had our first son and the smoking wasn't really conducive with a new parenthood pregnancy kind of thing.
Yeah. So logistically, I see that.
And the owner of the bar, Gary Bathis, asked if we wanted to start a food truck at a barbecue that we were having and handshake, sure, whatever. And I thought it was just, you know what I mean? Like drunken banter.
No big deal. Things.
And then, like, a couple weeks later, he was like, build out the kitchen, get your menu ready, like, let's do this. And I was like, oh, okay.
So this is for real.
Yeah. So away we went.
Wow.
And he bought the trailer first and then was like, hey, I got the trailer.
Nice.
It's delivered in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So what year was that?
2015.
Okay. So that's kind of how Adler's began then.
Well, 2016. Sheriff was one.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's exactly how it started, in her her parents' backyard.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So did you ever plan on becoming entrepreneurs? Did you guys have kind of this desire to be business owners originally?
I think so.
Yeah?
I think we always knew that we would eventually have our own business. working for other people and learning so much from, like, you know, like different companies like Linksters and Wheelhouse and everything. Mm-hmm. It kind of, we knew what kind of foundation, but we wanted to go more in a food direction.
Right. So, and it's nice to have people who will kind of invest in you. And mm-hmm. who did you say bought the trailer?
Gary Bathis.
So it's nice to have somebody who's like, hey, here's this, now make it your own, and, you know, best of luck. You know, have people to believe in you and help you.
It's a very flattering feeling to have somebody confide in you.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so fast forward a little bit then. How did what started in Davenport kind of make its way into downtown Winter Haven? Because from what I know, it kind of came to Winter Haven behind Jensen's or Jesse's?
Our brick and mortar. Before that, we were parking at Grove Roots, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't realize that either. Look at that. Collaboration.
Mm-hmm. She tried for like a year or two to get us into Grove Roots.
Really? I even brought her Great Dane. And be like, look
well, you
that
thought
dog.
The puppy would lock it in at that point.
They came out and pet her and everything. We're like, we have a food truck. They're like, thumbs up, cool.
Maybe come back another time. Try again.
We combed our son's hair and stuff. We're like, we really got to sell this.
Yes, you have to.
It didn't work.
So when would you say that kind of got its legs underneath it as far as, like, getting into Grove Roots and then starting to kind of make some headway in
Winter Haven. Well, once we got into Grove Roots, we started to spend a little bit more time in Winter Haven. We just really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. We liked it. Really reminded Jackie of, like, the Milk District, like, in Orlando. Mm-hmm. So we ended up getting a very rare date night at a babysitter for, like, 2 hours.
Hey.
And we came out, and we were having a drink over at, was it Jensen's or
Jensen's?
Jensen's. And then met Jesse there, and then we started talking about it, and she showed us basically a catch-all. Mm-hmm. The closet that just had backup stuff, and then was like, could you guys do something with this? I'm like, we're used to tiny spaces, because the food truck, we're like, oh yeah, this is gigantic.
I didn't even think about it like that.
Tiny space, very, very tiny space.
So like this quirky little idea of a pickup window and in an alleyway.
Well, I vividly remember getting burgers from there too, so equally as delicious.
That was a very
so how
spot.
Long did that go for? How long were you guys kind of there?
We opened, what was it, February 11th. So it was like a month before COVID hit.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So once COVID hit, what was it? The St. Patrick's Day. We were like, what are we even doing?
Oh, my gosh.
What did we do?
We were there for what, 9 months, though?
Yeah, we were there for 9 months. After that, yeah.
So the pandemic is kind of what did it then?
The pandemic is actually what got us going.
Really?
With the whole internet and like the rally around your restaurants and like people like really supporting and everything. Like I guess the silly, quirky little idea of getting burgers out of that alleyway.
Yeah.
Like people kind of like took to that.
Right.
And we got really lucky.
Yeah. So as far as the brick and mortar that you guys have currently, that kind of was birthed out of the pandemic as well. Am I right about that?
Yeah, we needed more space.
Yeah.
We needed a place to sit down for our customers.
Yeah.
Jessie needed that space back to get her bars back open for
a
while.
Right.
Remember how it was like kind of goofy for a while with like bars, you're not allowed unless you have food. And
what was that process like?
What do you mean?
Like being in the pandemic, starting a brick and mortar business, kind of taking that jump. What was that like?
It was very much a one day at a time kind of thing.
Yeah.
And learning. You learn so much.
Right.
We do best by learning by failure, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We kind of have to touch it. Like, we can't tell you one way to start a business, but we can tell you like 1,000 ways not to do it.
But that's valuable too.
It's super
I mean,
valuable. It's
you learn
valuable.
What not to do, and that's also just as valuable as learning how to do it.
So we were already scared anyways being in Winter Haven and not being from Winter Haven. At least Davenport, we were in there. You know, we both bartended and were servers, so we knew a lot of people. We didn't know anyone in Winter Haven. So we were already scared, and then the pandemic hit, and it was like,
yeah, and, you know, sometimes I hear people say it all the time, as far as entrepreneurship goes, like, just do it scared. You know, like, just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, you just got to jump.
Because you never know.
And you'll learn how to fly. Keep flapping those wings.
So would you guys say that collaboration had a lot to do with your success? Because I'm reading about you guys and kind of how the brick and mortar came to be, you know, there was a lot of collaboration with people like 610 and Whitehead and a lot of local businesses. So would you say that that kind of helped you guys as far as kind of getting, I don't know, submerged in Winter Haven and getting connected with people?
100%.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Winter Haven is an amazing little company or company community. Just kind of like hugs you.
Right.
Like, you know, it's so accepting. And I think that's why we love Winter Haven so much, because it actually feels like a community.
Mm.
Like, we live in Davenport, and you got, like, your plaza, housing development. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
And then you come to Winter Haven, and it feels like home.
Right.
Like, everybody
kind of gets along
and supports each other. And, yeah, all the small businesses especially, right. Everybody gets right around. So if you're in, you're very in.
Right.
610 and Whitehead, though, were the big ones for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what was that building before you guys moved into it? Was there some history behind that building?
It was terrifying. It was such a sketchy place.
I don't think I ever noticed it before it was Adler's.
You're lucky. Yeah, it was a terrible looking. It was,
tall grass and mattresses.
Ew.
Yeah. It had like a chain link fence with barbed wire and like just cracked up concrete.
Stranger Things. Like that's the entrance to the Upside Down.
Maybe I didn't see it because I didn't want to see it.
I always noticed it. I always loved it.
Really? Yeah. So like this is quirky and fun.
We actually, we met up with 610. We met up with Joe. And Joe took us to look at like five different places in downtown. Mm. Like one was off of Central, like a couple other ones. And they were all really good options, and as we got out, she literally saw that creepy little metal building and was like, what's that? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's ours, too. I can have someone run us over the keys. You want to check
kidding.
It out? Yeah. She saw, like, hearts out of her eyes. Me and Jeremiah, our partner, just saw just hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're like, that's so much money.
That like, doesn't look like where we
want
to be.
Yeah, the other places had, like, air conditioning, and, like, basically we just had to install a kitchen. This one was ripped down to the studs. Like, have to do the whole thing. All
but
we
look
saw
at the
was
smile
the money.
On her face.
She was right, though. It was the right spot because it's super cool.
It's rad.
Yeah. It is.
And that corner is so much better now, too, because not only are we there, but Honeycomb right there now. And then you got the barbecue place.
Yeah, you guys are, like, in this little slice of heaven.
That's nice.
We're our own little foodie corner.
I actually, a while ago, had Steve and Lisa on with Black Oak, and we talked about how they're, like, perfectly located because they can walk right down to Adler's and or Honeycomb or the barbecue spot, you know. Yeah. I'm like, you guys really picked a good spot, you know.
That's
but
awesome.
I never would have thought that that was just a junky little spot.
Yeah, it was old. Back in the day, it was a mechanic's garage.
Okay.
And like also they sold cars there.
Gotcha. Well, there probably is something to be said about being an entrepreneur and being able to have the eyes to see something that maybe you think doesn't have potential and then you put your ideas to it, and it becomes something really beautiful.
Yeah, it's worked out very, very well so far. So we're very excited about it. Still not 100% done.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's just simple stuff. Yeah, you got to stain them tables. We need some, like, a lot more plants. And I think Jackie's talking about doing, like, a plant mural.
Oh,
on
nice.
On that big white wall.
Yeah.
Which would be kind of cool.
So is there anything that you guys want to share that's kind of coming up or kind of things to get excited about since you mentioned that? Or is there anything kind of coming along?
No, we're free agents. If anybody wants to open up another Adler's.
Hey, there you go. There's a shameless plug.
What's up, Lakeland?
Hey.
We are probably in the next like 4 or 5 months, so we will start looking at doing another location.
Okay. Do you guys want to do that in Lakeland, or are you kind of just open-minded?
Lakeland would be about, because we did have the food truck permanently parked in Lakeland for a while, and it went very well. It was at the Poor Porker.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
cool.
So we were there for a while, and then we opened up this location. It was just too busy. We just didn't have the staff. It's still hard finding staff right now.
I bet.
Luckily, the staff we do have is amazing. But
that's nice.
We had to take it out of Lakeland, and now we get a lot of people coming like, when are you going to come back to Lakeland? And last time when we left Winter Haven, a lot of people were like, when are you going to come back? We're like, oh, you're just saying that. And then when we came back first week, we did not know that Winter Haven meant it like that because we ran out of food, I think, 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm. So I remember that. I remember coming like probably the first week or two that you guys were open. And I remember you guys were very kind but very honest about, hey, like we're kind of running out of stuff. So that's crazy.
It was extremely
What was that
flattering.
Like?
Overwhelming.
Do you close? Like, you're like, sorry. Like,
You had to. Yeah, you couldn't just sell cheeseburgers that you don't have.
I mean, that's true.
You pick them up tomorrow.
Yeah, right. We'll put it on your tab. Just come back for later. Yeah.
I mean, our soft opening, we ran out of food. We were supposed to be open until 7. We ran out by like 1.
Oh, my
gosh. It was nuts. Yeah. And we were, every day we prepped double, and then we were still running out.
Wow.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Hello, I'm Greg Littleton, President and CEO of Citizens Bank and Trust. As a family-owned community bank, the strong business model developed by our founders has remained solid for over 100 years to work with customers who live and operate within our market. Our employees work closely with customers to get to know each one by name. We support local organizations that provide important programs and services for the betterment of our community. In addition, our team also gives back to local nonprofits by volunteering thousands of hours each year to a variety of organizations. If you're looking for a bank with people who treat you like family, consider you and your financial needs the number one priority, and most of all, provide you stability and commitment for the long haul, then I invite you to stop by any of our conveniently located offices or visit us at citizens-bank.com to learn more. At Citizens Bank and Trust, we're proud to be your bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Promotional offer may end without notice. Loans subject to credit and underwriting approval. Appraisal, insurance, and other requirements or restrictions may apply. See lender for details. NMLS ID 528015.
On today's podcast, I speak with Zane Schwenk, a former professional wakeboarder who got his start right here in Winter Haven. Zane tells us some wild stories from traveling, the X Games, and much more. He also tells us why Winter Haven is truly the best place for water recreation. Well, welcome to the podcast, Zane.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is amazing. I didn't know the city of Winter Haven had this technology, all this cool stuff here.
Listen, we are really trying to step it up here at the Chamber, and we love using our podcast to talk about all the things that are going on in Winter Haven and all the cool people like yourself who live here and have made a legacy here. So, you know, I wanted to start with you telling us a little bit about yourself. And for the people listening, you know, this is the first time me and Zane are meeting. So I'm very excited to learn about Zane and kind of his background, how he came to Winter Haven. So share anything you'd like to, Zane.
Well, my name is Zane. I enjoy long walks on a beach. My name is Zane Schwenk. I came from Sarasota, Florida, right after graduating high school in 1993, I moved here. And for years prior, I'd been coming over to water ski with the Cypress Gardens water ski team and get mentorship and coaching from legendary, you know, athletes here like Ron Scarpa and, you know, all the a bunch of different water skiing legends over in this area. So it was, I knew where I was going for college. It was going to be the Cypress Gardens locker room, which is quite the education.
It sounds like it.
It is. But I moved over here and, growing up, I had a background in water skiing from, you know, 3 years old, family.
Wow.
Did the show skiing over there, and then I did a little stint in a circus over there.
You did not.
7 years, yep.
What did you do in the circus?
I did trapeze. I was on a teeter board, like a teeter totter.
You're kidding.
Would launch me up in the air and do a quadruple backflip.
Is this a joke? Because, Zane, I don't know you that well. Are you playing with me?
I had a 12-foot unicycle. I am not kidding.
Are you serious? Do you have pictures?
Google it.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
After this, I'm going to Google it. I'm going to hold you to that.
It's real.
That's amazing.
And so part of that is what got me kicked off, because one of our greatest assets here is my friend Mark Jackson. And Mark's with Polk County Sports and
Sports and tourism marketing. Yeah, I always butcher it. I'm with you.
But Mark was so gracious. When I was like 13, he gave me an interview on ESPN.
You were 13 years old?
Yeah, something like that. I was young, 13 or 14,
Are
something
you
like that.
Me?
And so that got me noticed by some people, and got me a few little sponsors, and then helped me kind of progress. And then, boom, I moved over here, and I've never left. I love it here.
That's amazing. You're 13 years old, and you're like out there on TV and killing it?
Yeah, it was a terrible interview on my part, but hey.
Is that on YouTube somewhere?
I'm pretty sure it's a squeaky voice. Most of them were back then, but I fell in love with these lakes growing up with my profession at the time. There was no place better,
right?
Because you can go. The wind can be blowing any direction. You can find an awesome, calm side to wakeboard on or ski or barefoot or whatever. And then there's so many legendary athletes that come from the toad water sports in this area that are always like lending a hand. It's just this community it's just everywhere you look, there's somebody who's skied somewhere,
right,
done something with skiing. Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
Well, it's really, it seems like a special thing. And, you know, you went back to the community piece of that. I'm sure that it's really cool because for a lot of people, I think, you know, the Chain of Lakes and water recreation and the Cypress Gardens water ski team, it's all very nostalgic. But then, you know, we're still seeing the Cypress Gardens water ski team out on Lake Silver, and they're doing the Saturday thing where they can come out for a free show. And so it's not only nostalgic, but it's being able to, like, give that back to kids now. You know, being able to grow up with that is really special.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because I talk to people all the time that move here, and they're like, what is this? There's just a group of people doing really cool stuff on the water here. And when the Cypress Gardens ski team, you know, developed out there, a lot of it was that nostalgic. It was the older crew doing all this stuff. And now it's thriving with new kids, with parents that never did anything in water sports, with parents that had no connection to that, but their kids came down and gave it a shot. And they're doing, like, technically, like, really amazing stuff on the water. And they didn't grow up in it like I did. It's just so cool to see that that new generation develop and you know, kind of get to, I guess, get their feet wet.
Oh my gosh, what a love it. You know, it's like you said, it's really special. And, you know, recently I was able to go to the Water Ski Sports Hall of Fame at the Visitor Center. And I'm pretty sure I saw you in there somewhere. How does that feel? I mean, I went in there. I had never been there before, and it was incredible. And then I saw your name, and I was like, what in the world? This is crazy.
Yeah, well, I get goosebumps. I
see
choked
that.
Up because that's like the pinnacle of a, I don't know, 40-some years of being on the water, and it's awesome. I'm really proud of that. It's amazing what they've curated and put together up there. Hank Longo, you know, pours all of his heart into that, and having that welcome center and having that space, you know, to celebrate, you know, what is so ingrained in our community. But it really, it was such a big part of our community. If you go back and watch Easy to Love.
Oh yeah.
Like that, I just started watching it with the kids.
Okay.
And they're 5 and 8, and they're like, My daughter loves it. She
really
thinks it's awesome. But
you know, I've never seen it.
You've got to check it out because you'll see what it was in the 40s,
right?
When Dick Pope, you know, said we're gonna do the first theme park ever, right?
It's crazy,
and it's gonna have these crazy people water skiing around. But you know, it's just so neat that we're trying to preserve that history of what happened. And what has been done and all these accomplishments, and I think if you look at it, I attest water skiing and toad water sports is a family sport.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Or you could call it a team sport.
Yeah.
You got to have a driver. You have to have a spotter, and you've got to be out on the water.
Right.
And typically, you need somebody else yelling at you. That's maybe a little brother or something.
Right.
Like that. That's how it was for me. And I talked to families, you know, over the course of my years that have, you know, helped them get a boat or, you know, gotten their second or third boat.
Right.
And they tell me, like, they've told me, my kids don't pick up the iPad when we're in the boat.
Mm.
My kids are engaging with their sister and going, all right, come on, cut here, turn here, do this. Mom, try this. Dad, try this. And it's such a cool family sport. So I think, you know, having the Hall of Fame up there to kind of promote the heritage of these amazing feats, but really to just keep it around, keep water skiing around, keep, you got to protect the sport. You got to keep growing the sport.
And absolutely.
That's something I'm passionate about.
Yeah. And I can definitely see that. And I think, you know, it being a family sport is important. You know, we like to think one of our brand pillars kind of internally at the chamber, one of those is like Winter Haven being a family destination. And I think a lot of people think family destination and the first thing they think of is Legoland and Peppa Pig, which, you know, is a part of why I think we're a family destination. But beyond that, being able to engage our families in something that they can do together and enjoy. So even if they aren't out on the water, they can still be a family and come out and see it happening out on the water and be able to be together and have that special family time. So I definitely think that it's awesome that it's become kind of a family thing and we're able to, you know, like you said, be able to look back on our history and also enjoy it now, which has been really special and awesome.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you if living in Winter Haven, and this could be, you know, from when you started young to now, has living in Winter Haven kind of enhanced your opportunities when it comes to that lakeside lifestyle, water recreation?
Is there a better term than enhanced? Because it is, for me, it's blown it out of the,
I mean, blown it out of the water.
Completely. oh yeah, you got sound effects.
I like that. That was good.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to. You're trying to incorporate a little bit more.
I like it.
I'm gonna try to give you. I'm gonna try to feed you some stuff.
Yeah,
we'll see if we can do more.
You know, living here in Winter Haven, like I said earlier, you've got access to so many different lakes. You can always find, you know, to progress if you want in the sport of water skiing, But more so, you can get a different scenery. I mean,
right.
To me, I had lived on, you know, smaller areas and just seen one spot for a while, and it just gets kind of monotonous. And,
right.
And honestly, when you want to get good, you need different surroundings. But we have such a underutilized, and in my opinion, underpromoted asset with our chain of lakes.
Yeah.
And not to mention just, you know, 570 lakes in Polk County.
It's crazy.
I mean, it's insane.
It is.
And, you know, my friends that live in Orlando and that wakeboard in Orlando exclusively and all these, you know, they come down here and they're like, wait, we're going over. Wait, you can go how far? How far you can go on these lakes? And they blows their mind. And so I just, you know, from fishing to wakeboarding and skiing and just anything you want to do, there's a book out there, I can't remember the author, but it's called The Blue Mind. And our connection with water, it does change your attitude in life. It changes your, it does for me at least.
I bet.
Ask my wife.
Yeah. I can ask her.
You can ask her.
I got her email address.
Perfect. Yes. She'll tell you. I'm a happier guy after I go out on the lake.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's something about being out in the sun, you know, being out in nature. And one thing I think I was talking to, I don't know if you know Cami Rickert with Paddleboard Winter Haven. I was chatting with her and she said, you know, kind of like I think what you're saying is with the chain of lakes, you could be on a lake that's like a little bit choppy and then you could be like, well, this isn't really working out. Maybe we should go over to, you know, whatever the other lake is. And you could be in a totally different scenario, right? I mean, isn't that crazy?
No, you can go get seafood here or you know, barbecue over here.
Yeah.
Or you can change your scenery. You can, you know, I go find our friends and pick up the kids and take them out. I mean, it's just great. I drive a car less on the weekend than I do the boat. Probably.
That's crazy.
So,
and how many places can you do that?
Not many. And to have, you know, the one thing I think we need to really also focus on in this area is safe boating.
Oh, right.
Because we've, you know, probably, I know boating in the last 2 years, and that was my world before. I worked on the boat side with Mastercraft, but it's grown so much. So many more people have bought boats.
Yeah.
And they really need to be aware on the water. There's a lot of fast-moving sea-doos. There's a lot of people on pontoons that are having pontoon boats having conversations. And, you know, I've seen closer calls, and there's a lot more people out there now. So I like to say you got to keep your head on a swivel. You got to protect the throttle. You got kids I got kids climbing over me. You got to keep that throttle from getting engaged. And you need to just act smart. Don't drive a pontoon boat and let your kids sit on the front with their feet dangling while you're going 30 miles an hour. And so,
right?
You know, those are the chain of lakes is really being used a lot more now.
Yeah.
But we got to get some
there's got to be some safety involved.
And some common sense that's got to happen out there. And it's just it's people, they may have bought a boat and they just don't
right.
know. It's and it is so fun.
Yeah.
But there's some, you got to have some response. I don't want to be Debbie Downer on
no,
this,
yeah,
but
yeah,
you
got
to
yeah.
be a little responsible.
Well, we don't talk about that a lot, you know, and I think that's something that's important, obviously. Are there resources for people who are like new boat owners or new to boating in general?
There are some classes that are available through, I think, FWC.
Oh, right.
If I'm
right.
not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, let's do it. Let's
yeah.
do some classes.
Hey,
let's do
there
some
we go.
Winter Haven boating safe. I'll help.
Look, there are some ideas happening right here on the podcast.
I tell you, I'm the one who's done the dumbest things on the water. Absolutely.
He's saying this from experience.
Absolutely. So I can teach you.
Right. What some, not to do.
Yes. Yes. I'm not saying I haven't done that. I'm just saying I see a better way to do it now.
Well, yeah. And if you want people to enjoy it, obviously you want the lakes to be a safe place for people to enjoy the lake.
Because
mm-hmm. You can't really enjoy it if it's not safe. And like you said, I mean, there are families out there with kids crawling all over. I mean, I have my brother-in-law has a, I don't know what you would call it, a membership or whatever they call it, Freedom Boat.
Yeah,
Freedom Boat
that's
Club.
Great.
And he loves that. But he also has three boys. So it's, you know, him, my sister, and those three boys out there. And it's definitely easy to get distracted and your kids are climbing all over you. And so it's important to know those, you know, rules of the water
mm-hmm.
so that nothing gets out of hand.
Yeah, dad multitasking as a jungle gym while you're driving a boat is a tough one.
I couldn't do it. I'm going to be honest. I've watched him do it, and I'm like, I don't know how you're doing that. Because they're like, you know, I want to drive, you know, get in the driver's seat. And
Yeah, absolutely. Just stay attentive, really.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
Right.
Because there's just more. There's a lot more boats out there than there were in the past, which is great.
Right.
Because that's, you know, keeping our marinas happy. It's, you know, there's a use for all these beautiful boat ramps that
right.
we had that used to sometimes be empty.
Yeah.
Now they're full.
They are so full.
So
it's crazy.
And Freedom Boat Club's awesome to bring people in and give them that resource. Another great resource is the Cable Park over
in
Auburndale.
Yes.
That is a great resource to get kids out on the water.
I've seen some of them doing it. It's crazy.
And they're tiny.
They're little.
Tiny little kids, and they're hitting these rails, and they're like, you know, it's like being a little aquatic Tony Hawk.
It's so
and
cute.
Just, you get to have fun
right.
with it. So there's some, like, we've got some things that, you know, major. Think about all the major cities. They don't have this.
No, they don't. No. And not the connectivity either.
Right.
We're really pumping ourselves up here, and I'm
feel
not mad
about
it.
It.
I'm happy
about
it.
Is this going to raise our property taxes?
I don't know. I guess we'll have to see after this airs. I'll let you know. All right. So, Zane, I did some research on you because I was obviously very intrigued and knew you've been a pro. You are a pro. And I heard that you competed in the X Games. Is this true?
Yes, several of them. I can't remember.
Oh my
how
gosh,
many.
More than one. All right,
yeah.
Can you tell us how many? Think of how many, and I want to know what that experience was like, and how did it happen? How did this happen? That's a pretty big deal.
It's probably. I mean, it was probably like I don't know, seven or eight, six, seven, eight, something like that.
He's done so many, he's lost track.
I can't remember them all, but the cool thing about the X Games was, you know. At the time, like 1996 was the first X Games for wakeboarding.
Okay.
And action sports were still brand new.
Mm-hmm.
What was so cool. We had our name badge, and we would go to the other events.
Oh,
like
yeah?
Motocross. We went to the skate park and sat on the top of the skate park watching Tony Hawk go right in front of us.
No kidding.
And I mean, they're all right there. And
that's
you
amazing.
Just walked in, and later as the X Games got a little more, you know, big, you didn't get that all access
right.
pass, but it was so cool in the
that is so
in
cool.
the beginning. I got the opportunity to actually work with them in the off season, planning out where we would have the next event and how the wakeboard, you know, how would it run in San Francisco, how would it run in Rhode Island, how would it run in. Where we were on the Schuylkill River in Philly, and somewhere else, California somewhere, can't remember.
That's crazy.
So I got to work with these, you know, the producers of the X Games, which is now a, you know, the Olympics of crazy sports.
Yeah, and, seriously, no kidding.
And so it was a lot of fun to hang out with those guys and the commentators. Chris Fowler always gave me a hard time, and we'd go out and have some fun. And
yeah.
Yeah, so it was – but it was so, like, niche, tiny. Like, nobody was a big deal.
Right.
Nobody – everybody was accessible.
No egos.
No egos. Yeah. No, no. Everybody was, like, you know, down to earth.
Wow.
Like, oh, man, that's cool what you do. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw – I tried it once, you know.
Right.
You know, and talking to these guys who are doing – crazy stuff. I'm like, I can't ride a motorcycle at all. I bend my handlebars every time I go on it. But
it's fun to watch.
Yeah, much respect.
Hello, hello. This is Anna Saavedra filling in for Bree. Today, I am joined by MJ Carnevale, the City of Winter Haven's Public Works Director, and we talk through everything, lakes management, hurricane preparation, and more. So stick around and stay tuned. Welcome to the podcast, MJ.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Now, I know, because you're the Public Works Director at the City of Winter Haven, you've been working with the lakes, though, for like a while, right?
Yep, since about 2011.
Dang, that's over
here in Winter Haven.
10 years.
Yes.
So you have a very unique perspective of what goes on to it, what or goes into the lakes, and how to take care of them, everything like that. So I'm excited to have you on, because if you guys don't know this already, this season of the podcast has been all about the Winter Haven lakes, the chain of lakes, and water skiing, and just talking about all things that come with having a city that has such wonderful natural resources like our chain of lakes. So, MJ, to start out, can you tell us a little bit about what your favorite part or what your favorite fact about the Winter Haven Lakes is?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really cool about our local lakes is they're what's called an umbertrophic system. So that means they are purely rainfall driven. So no water flows into our lakes. Everything that is there comes from the sky. And I think that's kind of a cool feature about Winter Haven's lakes.
Yeah, that is super cool. I would not have known that.
That's what I'm here for.
Also, my face when you said umbertrophic. I've never heard that word before.
Yeah, it's rainfall driven.
Okay, so, yeah. Cool.
There's no, unlike a lot of other lakes where you have streams that flow into it, we don't have any of that. It's all rainfall driven. All of our water is constantly moving away from us.
Interesting. So that is definitely something that's unique about our lakes, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. What else is there that's unique about our lakes?
I'd say the hydrology in general. So like I said, there's all of our water comes from rainfall. It's constantly all moving away from us. And what that means is we're at the top of the watershed. So we are part of the Upper Peace River watershed. So when water flows out of the chain, for instance, it goes through a system of drainage ditches that then goes to what we call the Peace Creek Canal that goes to the Peace River, and then that flows all the way out through Charlotte Harbor down to the Gulf of Mexico. So we're at the very top of that whole system from a surface water perspective. The other thing that's really interesting and again, unique about Winter Haven is that we're also at the top of the groundwater system. So
okay.
Below us, we have the Upper Floridan Aquifer, where all of our drinking water comes from. But the bottom of a lot of our lakes touch into the top of that aquifer. So as that aquifer goes up and down, that can have a big impact on whether lakes are losing water or gaining water from underground. So
interesting.
Overall, just kind of a unique – that's kind of what separates these systems from, I think, a lot of the other lakes within the state.
Okay. That's awesome. And the aquifer is a big part of the one water – kind of plan, correct?
Yeah, so I mean, understanding hydrologic restoration as a whole is really a big focus of that one water plan. So it's understanding that if we were to, let's say, restore wetlands throughout our area, we could hold more water here from a surface water perspective, which would let us recharge more water, recharge the aquifer, have more water available for drinking supply, and have kind of a sustainable source for that long-term drinking supply water. We call that the project with the wetlands, we call that the Sapphire Necklace, which is just one piece of the overall One Water initiative. But that's the long-term plan, is to restore those wetlands and be able to hold that water back in our area, whether it's from a very large rain event or whether we're in drought conditions. Having those wetlands locally make us more resilient to those changes over time.
Awesome. Now, what is involved in, like, restoring wetlands?
Yep. Good question. So we just did a project. If
A lot of people probably haven't seen it yet, but it's called the Lake Conine Wetland Restoration Project up on the southeast side of Lake Conine. And so that was a historic wetland that had been ditched. And so the idea was trying to get water off of that property. And so the city purchased that property about 20 years ago.
Wow.
And we worked with a few partners worked with the Southwest Florida Water Management District, the state DEP, and then Polk County and the city all partnered. And so what we did was we went in and we dredged out that property essentially and created a series of big wetland cells. So there's about a 400-acre watershed that goes from Lake Conine all the way up to about the Northeast Complex on MLK Boulevard. And so anytime it rains, all of that stormwater used to go out of a ditch directly into Lake Conine. And now we've diverted all of that onto this piece of property. And so now there's this wetland that takes that water and cleans it up before it goes into the lakes. So it's about a 30-plus acre wetland.
Oh, that's awesome.
And when we did it, we laid the foundation for what will be the Lake Conine Nature Park. So
okay. We
did all the wetland restoration work. We built berms. We put in some stormwater infrastructure. We did a lot of sediment removal out of there. We've planted back wetland vegetation. But when we did all of that, we literally did it to lay the foundation for that nature park long term. So now we can come in and those berms are set up to be able to have trails built on them and boardwalks added in there and some park amenities on the north side of the property.
So it'll be a nice place for residents to kind of take advantage of and visit.
Yep.
That's awesome. Now, just about a month ago, we had a hurricane. And I'm sure that, for your department, that's, a lot of work, both in preparation and after that. But before we kind of get into what that means for you and your team, what do hurricanes mean for our lakes?
Yep. Yes, that's a really good question. And it's timely. I think I was might've been telling you earlier that like Thursday of this week was the first time since September 22nd. So about a month ago that I'd touched anything work related that wasn't hurricane related.
That's insane.
It's been a busy month, but for us or for the lakes, one of the things that hurricanes has an impact on are the levels. So Hurricane Irma is a really good example. When Hurricane Irma came through, right before that, the chain of lakes was at probably a 5-year low, approaching kind of a 10-year low. So we're having trouble getting boats through canals. There's a lot of navigability issues starting to happen. And it was at the very end of the rainy season. So we really hadn't anticipated getting much more. We were looking at kind of a grim probably few years of the way people get around on the chain of lakes. Hurricane Irma brought that level all the way back up, refilled that system, and we've stayed pretty level since then, which is fortunate. Now, the flip side, this year with Hurricane Ian, we were pretty full to begin with. And we had a couple weeks of, we had 2 weeks of really, really heavy rains. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had some storms that hit what we call the 100-year threshold leading up to Hurricane Ian, and then Hurricane Ian on top of it. So there's a lot of water moving around out there. I think understanding how water moves between the lakes is one of the really interesting things that we've gotten to see. There's a lot of flowways. So the flowway, there's a structure on Lake Lulu where water flows out of the chain of lakes.
Mm-hmm.
That was ripping down there. I mean, there was water moving out of there like I haven't ever seen. I've seen water flow out of that structure before, but the rate at which it was moving out of there was pretty outrageous. There's between Lake Silver and Lake Martha, there's a connection point there. That's an underground pipe that, again, most people just don't know is there. There's a lot of water, more water moving there than I've ever seen before. And then just a couple weeks ago, between Lake Elbert and Lake Otis, there's a pipe that goes between those lakes to move water that was installed after Hurricane Donna. So Hurricane Donna was in 1960. Had a big impact on Florida.
I've never heard of Hurricane Donna.
It was installed in 1960, or the hurricane was in 1960, and so we think this structure was installed a few years after that in response to the high levels during Donna. But Otis and Elbert are pretty close in elevation, and it's a long run from one to the other. So to get gravity fall of water from one lake to the other, they essentially had to elevate the side on Lake Elbert, and then they dropped the side on Lake Otis. So the bottom of that pipe actually comes in below the bottom of Lake Otis.
Oh, wow.
And it goes into a well and kind of bubbles up. But we had to put water into that system. There's a pump system that you run on it. As far as anybody knows, that had never had water in it since it was installed. We're seeing some different conditions here. It had been dry for 60 years, dry enough for the last 60 years that we didn't get any water in there. So how water moves is a big factor for hurricanes for us. The other big piece that we're always looking out for lakes is water quality.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can get a big flush of rainfall, and it brings a bunch of debris with it that can bring some nutrients into the lake. But really, during hurricane events, you usually get a lot of dilution with that. Mm-hmm. So the impacts aren't as bad. And we have a pretty robust stormwater maintenance for cleaning our stormwater lines. And then we have a pretty robust street sweeping program.
Mm-hmm.
So generally throughout the year, we're trying to keep all of that stuff off the road. So there shouldn't be much built up to begin with. So the only stuff that you're getting in lakes at that point ends up being what comes down during the storm or what doesn't get cleaned up quickly afterwards. Mm-hmm. So those are the two, you know, the big things. The other big thing we always are on the lookout for are kind of chemical spills, wastewater spills,
yeah,
stuff like that. But first of all of those facilities are like heavily regulated to prevent specifically that type of thing from happening. But then also, again, you usually have massive dilution. So if you have a wastewater overflow, for instance, a lot of times that system is overflowing because it's had a ton of rainwater get into it. And so the majority of what's getting out of there is probably stormwater to begin with.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the dilution of that is, you know, pretty huge. And I think, you know, people see sometimes the notifications that, like, hey, there was a 1,000-gallon spill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 1,000 gallons sounds like a lot. But, you know, when you put that in terms of, like, Lake Elbert, for instance, a foot of water on top of Lake Elbert is about 55 million gallons of water. And that lake as a whole is probably closer to 7 billion gallons of water. So 1,000 gallons into a billion, you know, it's pretty – there's a lot,
yeah,
of dilution that happens there. And so during those big hurricane-type events, those are just more manageable.
Mm-hmm. So what is the cleanup process like for the lakes?
Yeah. During hurricanes?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Just, yep, we're talking about hurricanes.
Yeah. So for hurricanes, a lot of it is getting the brush up. And so getting that cleared off of roadways. And so we try to get back into street sweeping as quickly as possible. Because
okay,
a lot of times that stuff doesn't end up in the storm drain. It just ends up in the roadways.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to keep it from getting into the storm drain. And so we use a program. Our street sweeping program, like I said, is pretty robust. We drive where we're going to sweep based on connectivity.
Okay.
And so how the stormwater systems connect to the lakes. Some stormwater systems in the city, all the water goes into a pond first. Some of it flows directly to the lake. So we know where those are. Those kind of become a priority. We also have an understanding, thanks to our urban forestry inventory,
mm-hmm,
of where we have old trees that are likely to drop a lot of leaves, and where those are in relation to those stormwater systems. So, again, that factors into prioritization. And then so does our understanding of the water quality in the actual lakes. And so by putting all of that together, we kind of know where our hotspots are,
mm-hmm,
and try to get sweeping on those as quickly as possible after the storm.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, what would you tell people is the best way, especially if they have, like, lakefront property or dock or something? Because I go around Lake Howard every day, and those levels have definitely been pretty high recently. So, like, how do you tell people to prepare for that? Do you do anything to prepare for that, or you just let it ride?
So it depends. So for, let's say, if you have a dock on a lake,
mm-hmm,
all of our dock permitting references those high water levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking all of that into account when you build your dock is important.
Mm-hmm.
And recognizing that, hey, those management levels mean that this lake might get to that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And the city's also put a lot of work into some codes and ordinances over the last, you know, 70, 80 years that address setbacks from a lake. So, for instance, if you wanted to build a pool in your backyard,
mm-hmm,
and you live right on a lake, and that pool is within that flood zone, you know, you're gonna find out about that when you come in for your permit to build the pool. That, hey,
mm-hmm,
you're gonna get a lake in your pool if you don't.
Oh, for sure.
If you put it here.
Sure.
So how do you adjust for that? So I think that's it. Is just going through those channels. You know, I know sometimes the permitting processes can feel like a burden, but they're there. A lot of times they're there for a reason, and
yeah,
the reason is to make sure that, you know, your docks and your pools and your structures in your backyard are all not gonna get flooded to a level we know those lakes will get to.
Now, outside of the lakes, I know you said street sweeping a lot. I mean, how long does that process take for a city like Winter Haven?
So just to get everything up, so for us, cleaning up after a storm starts, you know, basically as soon as the winds die down.
Okay.
And so our team gets out and we do what's called a first push on the roads. And so that's clearing off all the big debris and just pushing it physically out of the actual road.
Okay.
this storm that took us, you know, a day or two, and then probably through it, to the following Monday. So the storm was a Thursday, and okay. We were pretty much done with our first push by Monday, and there were still some trees that were tangled in power lines and stuff like that. We were working with the power company on. So that's the first push. And then a lot of times we'll come through and try to start getting some of the really big trees that might still be impeding navigation on roadways, get those out of there. And then our solid waste team will start the actual debris collection process. And so as we hit those areas, we'll start sweeping behind that. And so as we start getting that cleared off, we'll get in and we'll sweep those areas.
Cool.
But, it depends. So this month or this storm, in about the last month, we've gotten most of the big debris up off the ground mm-hmm. through all of the city roads. In Irma, that took a lot longer.
I mean, that's, for sure, yeah. It went straight through here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was just a lot more debris on the ground. It just mm-hmm. took us a lot longer to get it cleaned up. There was also different resources directed at the cleanup after Irma.
Okay.
Because if you recall, there was a really big storm in Texas.
Yes.
Right beforehand. And so all of the debris haulers were in Texas already. And then Irma impacted the entire state. So the ones that did start trickling out of Texas when they came to Florida, you know, they didn't all go to one area. So
yeah.
With this storm, you had a little more concentrated impacts. And so the response has been more concentrated and because of that, a little quicker, I think.
So each storm is obviously different.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man. Now, I kind of want to circle back to the lakes yep. really fast. And can you tell us a little bit more about the Sapphire Necklace Project?
Yep.
I know that the state government gave quite a lot of money for this project, I think, in the last year, correct?
Yeah, there's a handful of different grants, and it's a really, really big effort, but there's a handful of grants involved. But, the goal with that, like I said, is really to store more water within our area. And so when it comes to a storm, for instance, a lot of our water, it's all shooting out away from us really quickly, and what we're trying to do is to force it all through small channels, right?
Okay.
And so all of our water is moving away, and it's moving out to the Peace River. So if there was, let's say, a large wetland in this part of the watershed where you could take a portion of that water and kind of spill it off
mm-hmm.
and let it store there rather than trying to force it all out of one narrow path at the same time, it's like trying to merge traffic onto a highway. You know, when you're getting onto I-4 at Champions Gate there
all
that traffic's coming together, that's what we're trying to do with water is we're trying to force it all together and push it out as fast as possible. But if you can create these wetlands, and that's, a lot of these areas naturally had wetlands, and so mm-hmm. this is how that system functions. So you're kind of putting back the way that nature used to do it. Storing that water in this part of the watershed slows down how it moves south. And then the flip side of that is you have more water stored in this area, so during those dry periods, there's water that could be moved around, but then also your soils just hold more water. Your aquifer in the area holds more water. And so that kind of comes back to the lakes. And I think I mentioned earlier, the way that the upper Florida aquifer interacts with those lakes is really interesting here. And I think we've seen some of that. I think some of the high water levels on Lake Elbert are an mm-hmm. example of that. If you think about our lakes as a cup with a hole in the bottom, right? So if you were to try to fill that cup with a hole in the bottom, water's flowing out of it, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when the aquifer is below the bottom of our lake levels, that's kind of how things are working. Water's moving out of the bottom of those lakes down to that aquifer. When that aquifer's way up, it's like you just took that cup and you stuck it down in a bowl of water, and now you're pouring water into it. So it just kind of, it's going to hold in there, it's going to pour a little slower, it's going to move a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I think we're seeing in a lot of our lakes locally is, that cup with the holes in the bottom is now sitting down inside of another bowl of water.
Yeah. So when we're talking about the Sapphire necklace and restoring wetlands, like how do you pick where you're going to do those efforts?
Right. It's a good question. So a lot of the areas that have been identified are areas, like I said, where there were historic wetlands that were maybe drained. And so those become prime candidates because just from a regional hydrologic perspective, the water's already going there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier to just kind of pull it off. But also, it has the right soil conditions. There's a lot of the right, because that's how it was originally. It's just kind of putting that back. So that's a big factor. Another factor is just understanding which of those is going to have the most benefit. And then working with, various landowners and developers to make that happen.
So your team, do they work on all of those kinds of, where
the wetlands historically were, what the soil is like. Is that all within your team? Is this data that you've already had?
Yeah, that's a good question. So our team in natural resources does a lot of work on understanding the lakes and where they're at currently. As we kind of expand out, that one water effort is really a citywide effort. So mm-hmm. our utilities team is very involved in that. Our parks and recreation team is very involved. Our planning team is very involved. So it's really a citywide effort. And so there's a lot of work happening through some various consultants. There's a lot of historic data that exists, and it's kind of putting all of that together to figure out what makes the most sense. It's understanding, working with our economic development team, where what the economic tie-in might be, what the development tie-in might be, working with our parks and recreation team to say, hey, what would this look like if this restored wetland had walking trails around mm-hmm. it and boardwalks and opportunities for recreation next to maybe new development? And so how does all that start to fit together? So it's really a big effort with a lot of moving pieces. It could be as simple as just go out and buy land and restore wetlands. But I think there's the philosophy the city's had is, let's work with that as we grow and make that a part of the fabric of our community, the same way that the Chain of Lakes is part of the fabric mm-hmm. of our community. And a lot of these wetlands, you know, they end up encircling kind of the eastern part of the city,
okay.
Balancing the Chain of Lakes on the west, and you kind of end up with this nice sapphire necklace all the way around the city.
The Low Payment Kings at the Mahalik Auto Group are very proud and excited to be sponsoring another season of the Winter Haven Chamber podcast. Hi, it's Ralph Mahalik Jr., the Low Payment King. I just want to remind everybody that the Low Payment Kings are four stores here in Polk County: Alfa Romeo Fiat of Winter Haven, Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Winter Haven, Lake Wales Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, and Posner Park Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Fiat. And we look forward to serving you and saving you more here in 2023. We have 1,700 vehicles in stock and incoming, so we can get you satisfied today or in the near future. We're very proud of our five-star team and all the clients that we've satisfied in 2022 and over the last 57 years with the Low Payment Kings Mahalik Auto Group. We look forward to satisfying you soon, too, in all departments. New and used vehicle sales, service, parts, maintenance, recalls, body shop, collision center, and a whole lot more. We're proud of all the community work we do with various charities and community events throughout Polk County. And the Low Payment Kings are very proud to be part of the fastest growing county in the state of Florida. That's Polk County. When you have time, please like us on all our social media pages and check out lowpaymentkings.com, where you can get pre-approved for your car, truck, van, or SUV, schedule a service appointment, look at our career opportunities at all of our stores, and even get pre-approved for your loan or lease. Again, visit lowpaymentkings.com, call us toll-free soon, and like us on all our social media. God bless you and your family, and I wish you everyone the best of luck in 2023.
Thanks for listening to our Best Of episode. Be sure to tune in every week to It's Happening in the Haven, available on all your favorite podcasting platforms. To learn more about Winter Haven and the Chamber, visit winterhavenchamber.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. We hope you've learned a little bit about our community today and even more about the people who are shaping its future. After all, no true community exists without the people who form it. Winter Haven. Some call it a haven, we call it home.